break down the recent challenge to the Affordable Care Act at the U.S. Supreme Court, I'm joined by Professor John Graby. This is The Legal Impact, presented by the University of New Hampshire Franklin Pierce School of Law, now accepting applications for JD graduate programs and online professional certificates. Learn more and apply at law.unh.edu. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or host and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire. So, John, what was this most recent case centered around?
It was centered around the most recent is actually, it's worth underscoring that this is the third time that the Affordable Care Act's been challenged at the Supreme Court. And this most recent challenge derives from the fact that in 2017, Congress lowered the penalty slash tax for declining to purchase health insurance to zero. To set the stage here again, the Affordable Care Act it's helpful, I think, to think of the Affordable Care Act as a three-legged stool. The first leg of the stool is the so-called guaranteed issue provision, which basically means that if one applies for health insurance, one is not going to be turned away. So you're guaranteed that you'll be issued a policy. The second is the community rating provisions say that everybody gets within a particular community gets charged the same rate. So you can't be charged more if you've had cancer, for example. In order for these two mandates to work, that insurance companies have to take all comers and they have to charge the same rate to everybody, it was thought that the individual mandate was a necessary third piece of that. And the individual mandate sought to get healthy people into the health insurance market. For insurance to work, some people have to pay in more in premiums than they take out in actually, policy benefits. And so as originally designed, everybody was either required to, not everybody, there were some exceptions, but basically everybody was required to either sign up for health insurance, or if they chose not to pay a penalty or a tax into the U.S. Treasury that would allow it to shore up the system.
Which would show up in your tax return every year if you didn't.
That's right. That's right. So that's how it was originally designed. There was, of course, a famous challenge to the constitutionality of the act back in 2013, and the act was upheld. Chief Justice Roberts joined with the more liberal justices of the court to hold that the so-called individual mandate should be treated as a tax under the Constitution. And if treated as a tax, it was constitutional. And then there was a whole other part of the act that was struck down that sought to require states to participate in a Medicaid expansion. So I just wanted to sort of set the stage first. So the individual mandate has been the most controversial part of the Affordable Care Act, this idea that government can force people to buy a commodity that they may not want to buy or pay a penalty for doing so. In 2017, Congress actually lowered the payment that one needs to make if one does not purchase health insurance to zero. All right. Once that happened, there was another court challenge brought because this individual mandate was upheld as a tax. The argument now is that, well, if the tax is zero, there is no tax, and the individual mandate is unconstitutional. And in order to argue that, you have to go back to the original part, the original decision in Sebelius, which held that the individual mandate could not be upheld. It was actually unconstitutional as a product of Congress's Commerce Clause power. So that's what Chief Justice Roberts did. He basically said the mandate would be unconstitutional if there were only the Commerce Clause to support it. However, it can be upheld this other way. Okay, it can be upheld under Congress's taxing and spending power. So the argument now is, well, it can't be upheld as a tax anymore because there is no tax. And now we have to go back to what Chief Justice Roberts and the dissenting justices said back in 2013. They said that the individual mandate cannot be upheld under Congress's Commerce Clause power. So now the individual mandate is unconstitutional. All right, so that's the first part of this case. The second part of this case then focuses on severability, is what it's called, if in fact the court agrees. So if a part of a law is held to be unconstitutional, a court always then needs to decide, well, what about the rest of the law? Okay. Can the rest of the law continue to exist without this component? And that needs to be handled on a case-by-case basis. And it's a matter of interpreting the intent of the legislature that enacted the law. And so the second part of this case focuses on whether, if in fact the Supreme Court agrees that the individual mandate is now unconstitutional, whether the rest of the Affordable Care Act can nonetheless stand. Okay. And so that's the heart of the matter in this particular case.
Now, what did the two sides argue and why the Supreme Court should side with them?
Well, there are individuals who have brought this challenge to the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act, and there's also some states that are arguing for striking down the Affordable Care Act. And the name of the case is California versus Texas in the Supreme Court. So California is defending the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. Texas is there arguing against it. But there are other individual litigants involved. And actually, there's questions I won't get into about standing and whether or not these litigants do have the right to actually seek to invalidate the act.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that this is coming directly from the states to the Supreme Court instead of like within Congress.
This is the new thing, right? States that disagree with federal policy, we see it in the immigration context. We saw it in the DACA case. We're seeing that we are a divided nation, and depending on who's in control in Washington, we're now seeing the use of lawsuits by states that are dominated by, the opposite political party in order to challenge these. And so that's, the Affordable Care Act has been no exception there. So basically, those on Texas's side say, first, the individual mandate could only be upheld as a tax because it's now zero, it's unconstitutional. And then second, the individual mandate was really a linchpin of the whole act. If you look at the legislative history, if you look at what the sponsors of the act said, all of them made the point that without the individual mandate, the whole act falls apart because you can't tell insurance companies that they have to take all comers and they have to charge everybody the same rates. It will lead to the collapse of the insurance industry without this individual mandate. All right. And there is a lot in the record. And certainly back when the Affordable Care Act was being passed, this was deemed, the individual mandate, the so-called individual mandate, was deemed to be a really central component of the act. In fact, New Hampshire years ago did actually mandate that insurance companies take all comers and charge a community rate. And what happened was lots of health insurers left the state of New Hampshire as a consequence. So that history was all very much in the mind of people who crafted the Affordable Care Act. And indeed, it was also patterned on Massachusetts healthcare system, what was called Romney Care. So you actually recall in 2012, we had this odd situation where the presidential nominee for the Republican Party was the architect of a very, very similar legislative scheme in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And so he was put in the somewhat uncomfortable position of arguing, hey, that was awesome what I did down in Massachusetts, right? I proudly embrace Romney Care, but it would be terrible for the federal government to do that. He had to make a federalism argument. So that's what I'm
there's a whole lot of federalism, yay, confusion in this.
There is. And that was a tough argument for me. Romney to make, because it's not that intuitive for many people. So in any event, that's what Texas is saying. What the California side of the argument is saying is that no, it's a matter of legislative intent. And when Congress lowered the tax to zero, it left the rest of the act in place. Okay. It knew what it was doing. And so if we're trying to ascertain what Congress intended, we know what Congress intended. Congress intended the rest of the act to stay in place. It could have struck the whole thing down as part of that same legislation. Moreover, and to the surprise of many, even without the individual mandate, the Affordable Care Act has continued to function. Now, whether it's functioned in an optimal way, people could talk about that and debate that.
You will bring Lucy in for that.
Yeah, exactly. Bring Lucy in for that. But, it hasn't totally collapsed on itself.
Right.
In the years that they lowered it to 2017. And so there's sort of a pragmatic argument for leaving it in place, too. So court held oral argument on this case a couple of weeks ago, earlier in November. And reading the tea leaves, it looks as though challengers to the Affordable Care Act are likely to go 0 for 3 before the Supreme Court.
To me, it sounds like that argument that California is making is just playing to the hearts and minds of the conservative justices. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a sense, yes, at least, you know, conservative has become a term that's taken on different meanings in different contexts. But if one thinks of conservatism in terms of incrementalism and not, you know, not and judges not doing more than they need to do. I mean, the argument from the California side is, look, you know, we don't want to knock over this law that you know, pervasively regulates healthcare in the United. I mean, there's so many aspects of the Affordable Care Act, you know, that are in place and operating right now, including the Medicaid expansion components, but all sorts of other things as well, too. It would be an act of great judicial hubris, you know, to say that Congress intended to wipe out this comprehensive regulation of this major aspect of the healthcare market by implication. You know, we shouldn't lightly infer that Congress intended to do something so drastic, especially when they had the chance to do it.
Now, what are some of the rumblings we're hearing from the justices on this?
Well, you know, it's always interesting. It's really much easier at the Supreme Court to tell what the court is thinking in my experience than it is in lower courts. I often used to come out of oral arguments at the First Circuit, which is the intermediate appeals court where I worked for many years. And I wasn't sure which way the panel was going because the same judges would really skeptically question both lawyers. But there's something performative about oral argument at the Supreme Court. And it seems as though, you know, the each side, sometimes the justices, you know, seek to help the side that they're on in terms of their questioning and seek to, you know, to damage the side that they're opposed to. So reading those tea leaves, it really did seem as though Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Kavanaugh, at least, were not persuaded even if the individual mandate were now deemed to be unconstitutional, the proper remedy would be to strike the whole act down. They seemed inclined, in other words, to accept the argument that this is severable. If we think this is unconstitutional, this aspect of the law, we can sever it. We can take it out and leave the rest of the act in place. If Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Kavanaugh, at the very least, believe that the individual mandate is severable, those two votes plus the three votes of the votes of the three remaining liberal justices would be enough to sustain the act.
When do you think we'd get a decision on this?
Well, again, it was argued early, so this is one that may not go to the end of the term. It's hard to say. The court usually starts issuing decisions with some regularity after the first of the year. Much will depend on the extent to which there's disagreement and the number of justices who want to write on this particular issue.
What do you predict will happen if the justices side with Texas?
Well, the Affordable Care Act would fall. And
would Congress be able to adjust it to make it still work?
Yes. Yeah. There's always the possibility of congressional intervention. You know, we have not seen much from Congress in terms of functionality. There will be a new Congress seated after the first of the year. You know, if in fact the Affordable Care Act fell, I think many would predict that it would be a highly disruptive event. It would have a profound impact on markets, and maybe it would be the sort of thing that would cause Congress to come together and to address it. But we're seeing a pandemic right now, and people across the board are saying we need Congress to intervene, and politics are preventing that from happening. So there's certainly no guarantee. But yes, in theory, Congress could step in and take some action if the Affordable Care Act were struck down.
Thanks for listening to The Legal Impact, presented by UNH Franklin Pierce School of Law. To help spread word about the show, please be sure to subscribe and comment on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify.